The SGGQA podcast is brought to you in part by Me Audio. So here's the deal. If you've ever seen me in a live stream or in an interview or some other kind of video, you've probably seen me wearing some fancy earbuds. For the last couple years, my work buds have been almost exclusively from Me Audio. Excellent drivers, fantastic accessories, and both my wife and I had our ears scanned by the folks at Me Audio for custom molded ear tips. Super comfy. The MX line of Pro in-ear monitors is one of the easiest lineups to understand, starting at $60 and built around actual professional use. Detailed sound and durable construction, but also with some fun options like customizable faceplates. Even if you're not working on stage or in studio, Pro solutions like these are fantastic audio options, and they don't need to break the bank. And the company also supports a lineup of consumer gear with options for true wireless and noise-canceling Bluetooth earbuds, adapters for TVs to stream your audio to nicer headphones, and headsets for kids to help control the volume on fresh, developing ears. I can't stress that last one enough. We have to start kids out with healthier listening habits. It's a great combo, high-quality audio gear built by a team of folks with recording-grade use in mind, but at consumer-friendly prices. But of course, I can do you one better. If you shop the kit at meaudio.com and use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout, you can save an additional 10% over their already competitive prices. Once again, meaudio.com, M-E-E-audio.com. Shop some fun kit, promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout, 10% off. Keep your ears and your wallet happy at the same time. I want to thank the folks at Me Audio for hooking up the promo code. Now, let's get on with the show. All right. I believe this means we are live. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, tech fans of all shapes and sorts and sizes and persuasions, welcome to another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. I'm Juan Carlos Bagnell, a.k.a. Some Gadget Guy, the SGG of this horribly named podcast series. But of course, the QA, that's the important part. We have a more interactive conversation about some of the top tech news stories of the last week. And this is why I like to hold my show on a Monday. So we get the weekend to kind of sort out our feelings. Maybe some new news has broken. We can kind of jump on that as we start our week off. And we like to get our week started right. We like to really dig into some fun tech. Like, for example, the V key on my Cooler Master keyboard is sticking a little bit. You don't realize just how, like, obnoxious it is when you're trying to, like, copy-paste, and then you paste, like, three times in a row because that key stuck. So I'm going to have to disassemble my Cooler Master keyboard here and make sure I can, like, clean that out. But I got a whole bunch of amazing suggestions on other keys and switches that I should be trying out. Because I like the clicky keys. So if it's clackier, then that works for me. Let's see. We've got Aditya Anil. We've got Dave Burns. Welp, I'm damn. Everyone give Welp, I'm damn an F in chat. Because I think his Pixel got pushed back again. He's really looking forward to getting his hands on a Pixel 6. We got Mr. Barry Johnson. We got Engineer Reacts, and Barry's been getting around. He's been doing some work with some other really, really solid YouTube channels talking about tech and stuff. So definitely keep your eyes on Barry and what he's been working on, because I've enjoyed his standalone videos. It's just been real good times. We've got Mac Hall. We've got Mech 1164, Boing Byte, Dustador, Gormlord. I'm missing people. Q3 Becker, host, that's me. All right, we've got what I'm alluding to is we've got a really good group here. We've got some fun topics to talk about. I'm back on my show format, so we're gonna have a news block, we're gonna have a subreddit plug, and then get into some gadget chat, Pixel 6A rumors, Apple AirTag, security issues. It's not been a great week for Apple. And genuinely, I feel like 2021 has been the year we've been peeling back the marketing sheen of Apple as a company and just really examining how companies do business and treat their employees and how we want to spend our money with companies that are making these products and services. So why don't we jump into some housekeeping? Because last week for me was kind of a recovery week. I worked my rear end off getting into Thanksgiving, trying to prep some major videos, big camera video, some commentary, some live streams, and then keeping up with some of my side gigs that also help pay the bills. And coming back, it was really just all about catch up. Like, I tried to give myself Thanksgiving and, like, through the weekend, mostly off. So just getting back up to speed takes so much longer, and getting to that momentum, it takes so much longer than you think it will. And that was only from, like, 3 days off. I mean, that's the thing that kind of blows my mind, is I feel like I need a vacation from my vacation, but then I'd be even way further behind on other projects and stuff. So last week was a little lean, but I've been trying to kind of fill in some things with, I mean, we're getting to the end of the year. So there are all of these ideas kind of percolating for best of lists and, you know, smartphone rankings. And so I wanted to try and play with some of those ideas too. I don't really like doing this was the winner phone of the year. That's never been my speed. But I do kind of like playing with community-style commentary on this kind of stuff. So, jumping into some housekeeping. Let's see if my web browser works. This could be exciting. I've been updating OBS. I don't know if this is going to work. I thought I had it set. Okay, here we go. Just first off, two Patreon posts. I shared my food prep video. You know, I always talk about how my family's super into Thanksgiving. And this also kind of dovetails with when I talk about trying to get more use out of your phone. We had a conversation on the Discord this morning just about how people still kind of resist this idea that the pocket computer in your pocket right now is way more capable than you're probably using it for. And when I bring up these examples, I always kind of catch this pushback. Like, yeah, well, you make YouTube videos. You can't expect average consumers to do things like that with their phone. Edit video? Who even edits video? And we're watching this explosion of services like TikTok. You know, that is video editing. It's a very rudimentary and streamlined form of video editing, but average consumers are doing that a lot. So I like to put my money where my mouth is. There's a longer cut for my family where we actually like see faces of people, and I got to see my new nephew, and you know, like there's a little bit more of like the sort of family gathering and photos and things like that. I got this really adorable photo of Lex and meeting her nephew for the very first time, and they kind of just like bump heads. I mean, it's just the cutest photo, but I'm not going to share pictures of kids publicly. So I did a cut down. So not only did I shoot, and you remember a couple weeks back, I was talking about I wanted to shoot my Thanksgiving anamorphic to make it special. I thought it came out pretty well. The anamorphic adapter, I need to play with some other options. It was okay, but it has that nice kind of blurry, creamy feeling to the corners. Like the vignetting is very tasteful and artful. I started getting like those J.J. Abrams style lens flares moving across the frame. So there's a master cut for my family that's shared privately. And then on the Patreon, I did a cut down doing this too. And again, there's nothing special about this. I shot it 4K, 60 frames per second. I shot it anamorphic and did a D squeeze. I slowed everything down by at least half speed. And so when you're watching all this cool food prep, there's a natural half speed slow motion. And then, you know, I cut it all up in PowerDirector and uploaded it, and it looks pretty good. Even the music kind of worked out well. A lot of the mobile video editing services now have some kind of built-in subscription for music licensing. So I can't guarantee that it's going to work on all YouTube videos, but like I uploaded this to YouTube without any copyright freakouts. So that's encouraging. You know, if you're paying for, you know, a KineMaster or a PowerDirector, it's nice to know you also get some other like stock footage that you can mess around with. And to me, this is as straightforward as it gets. Shooting pretty B-roll of food prep, setting the table for Thanksgiving, set it to some holiday music, upload it, and now we've got a family memory. You know, instead of just kind of a handful of like, you know, quick composed photos that we're probably never going to look through again, Thanksgiving 2021 was kind of special. Thanksgiving 2021 was the first time we had all gotten back together in, for some of us, in over 2 years, and not just doing a video call for a holiday. So I felt like that deserved a little bit more attention. And just how incredibly accessible this is for anyone with a phone, from like a, what, like a Pixel 3a on, would easily be able to replicate what I was able to shoot. Obviously, I was using fancier phones, but you can still edit and render 4K video from mid-ranger phones, so there's nothing holding people back from really doing this kind of stuff. So I shared the cutdown on Patreon, and then also on Patreon, last week, we kind of talked out my road trip report card, right? I hit the road. I really wanted to try and get a feel for different phones. You know, like I had the Vivo. The Vivo scored some good points for certain kinds of use. The Pixel was good for other kinds of use. I also packed some older phones like a Galaxy S10e and an LG V50. And then, of course, also my Duo 2 is sort of a more tablet-y or computer solution. And if you caught the podcast last week, it was really rambly because that's just my speed. Is I just kind of ramble through my thoughts and feels. So I took a listen back to all of the verbiage that kind of got belched out of my face. And on the Patreon, there's also a more concise write-up of the holiday road trip smartphone report card. And just breaking down the pros and cons of every single device that I took to hit the road with. So some good, some bad, and you know, to spoil this article, aside from my specific thoughts and what those pros and cons were, I mean, the main takeaway is, unfortunately, I still don't feel that there's one catch-all unicorn device that can get all my work done. And that's what's kind of like, ugh. Like, we always kind of keep running into some additional accessory or companion device or other gadget or purchase, and like, we just can't quite land everything in one, you know? Like, it maybe it has amazing media and gaming capabilities, but the camera sucks. Or maybe the camera is fantastic, but there's no computer use. Like, you can't use it as a desktop mode or something like that. We keep getting so close to just putting all these pieces back together. Oh, and everyone's saying hey to TK. TK's in the chat. I hope this means that he's back and getting rested up from some of his travel, because if you caught last Thursday's Best of Our Week, TK and Josh were hanging out in Hawaii. These fancy guys hanging out and being all cool and relaxing, all maxing outside the pool. I don't know. That didn't work at all. Could not stick the landing. Yeah, Boeing Bite, no one device to rule them all. But hopefully this means, you know, TK had safe travels back. So I'm glad you're on our side of the Pacific again. Oh, TK saying no pool for Josh and I. So we did Best of Our Week. And I need to highlight this because usually I'm the problem. Usually it's me being rambling and making our show run longer than it should. I was working my butt off to try and get TK and Josh out. Like, we were going to keep it to like an hour. And I think we did pretty well considering. Maybe we hit like an hour 20 or something like that. But I was like, TK, Josh, you have like one last night here. Josh is hitting an early flight. Go do something. You're on an island, man. Go have some fun. And they, it was Josh and TK that kept running us on tangents. So I just want, because usually I'm the one to blame for that. I needed to highlight that. I was really trying to get you out. So if there was no pool time, I feel like that's not on me this time. All right. And then I just had time to put out one other editorial last week. Just something that, again, kind of inspired by the conversation that Josh, TK, and I had on Best of Our Week. Qualcomm put out a big announcement, three different tiers of SoCs, products to focus on the next generation of premium tier smartphones, always connected, you know, sort of ARM-based, Windows on ARM PCs. And then a lot of news about gaming, that Qualcomm is going to be engaging in a partnership with Razer. So one of the videos I did get out, I just kind of wanted to break down some of my thoughts on mobile gaming. This is a topic I've covered in the past before. This is something that I've talked a lot about before. And it's still something that I think needs a bit more examination, especially from the tech enthusiast community, where just like using your phone as a mobile computer, there's a lot of pushback on that idea, or it's not good enough, or it's too hard to use. There's the same sentiment when it comes to gaming on a smartphone, where I think a lot of folks still think of gaming as like either the worst, you know, gotcha mechanic, slot machine, cash grabs full of microtransactions, or it's all Fruit Ninja. You know, like we never paid attention to the advancement of gaming beyond that. And I don't think developers get enough credit for bringing really solid titles to Android, even when it's late. Like right now, I just finished up Tesla Force. It's an incomplete game. There are supposed to be some updates coming out for new weapons and another tier of like missions, but it's this really great sort of four-stage roguelite, and you build up your you know series of powers and twin-stick shooter style. I mean, twin-stick shooters are kind of my jam right now, anyway. But this is a game that originally launched on Steam for PC. It's now on all the major consoles. And then there's like a half-price, same game, but a half-price version of that that's available on Android. And that's without, you know, shopping it on a sale. So there are all these like these really great indie and sort of mainstream older console and PC gaming experiences that you can find on mobile that don't engage in the same kind of like ratcheting microtransaction. And so when we see that Qualcomm and Razer are working on a mobile gaming, kind of Nintendo Switch-style developer kit, that's really encouraging. If we can get that hardware into people's hands, then I think developers might be more interested in taking Android seriously as a gaming platform. One of the points that I bring up in this video, just to spoil my video so you don't have to watch it and help with the YouTube algorithm, one of the ideas that I kind of point to is, even for how much better, you know, Xbox and PlayStation have gotten with backwards compatibility, I still think the next best backwards compatible player behind PC is Android. So on my, you know, computers, I can go to Steam and my entire Steam library is still basically accessible. And, you know, even more, like, I've got a collection of all the free games from Epic, good old games, I've been buying through them a lot, the Humble Bundle games, I've been buying with them a lot, but then they give me Steam codes. You know, all of those games, when I build a new PC, I install Steam, I install Epic, I'm ready to go. When it comes to consoles, there's a much more limited availability of backwards compatibility. And especially going back, like I was real cranky about the PS3 era. If I want to play my favorite twin-stick zombie shooter on the PS3, actually there are two really good twin-stick zombie shooters on the PS3, I need to play it on a PS3. There has never been like a direct, I bought this game and now I can play it on a PS4. One of them I can rebuy on the PlayStation 4, but that drives me crazy. Like, I bought this game and the license is stuck on the PS3. But if I pull up an Android phone, if I want, I can go back to like Shadowgun. If I want to replay Shadowgun, I can replay that. If I want to go back and play one of my favorite tower defense games, Sentinel 3. Sentinel 3 gives me some funky warnings on new phones because of aspect ratio and incompatibility. Game still plays. I can still play Sentinel 3, and that game rocks. I kind of regularly, it's like my comfort food. I just want to play a couple, unending missions. You know, just let me just see how long I can keep up my little tower defenses before I'm completely overrun. It takes an hour at this point because I'm pretty good at setting up my sniper towers. So that kind of thing, I don't really feel mobile has ever gotten enough credit. So short story, incredibly long, I put together an entire video to kind of focus on that a bit more specifically without all of the verbal tangenting that I just did right here. In fact, Produce is in the chat. Some other people were talking. Like, we just got some improved PlayStation 2 emulation capabilities on Android. And, I mean, that's another thing, too. Who was it? I don't have this in the official show notes, but I want to say it was Phil Spencer. Someone please correct me if I'm wrong, but there was another interview with like a really big time gaming developer, person who he started talking about emulation and that it's a really difficult thing to do, but it's something that the gaming industry needs to start taking a more serious look at, especially the preservation of titles that don't have an easy path to monetization, especially in my opinion. That's where emulation really comes into its own and does sort of gaming a kindness. I'm kind of way off tangent here. Words are hard. But so many old games will never get re-released or republished. No one will ever make money on them. We need to have a path for those to fall into the public domain and where people can conveniently access those games and play those games. I feel like there's an art preservation at play. And it's really difficult. It's easy for me to say, yes, we should have the ability to emulate old games. But we also need to have a hard look at like our licensing, our copyright. Everything needs to have some kind of conversation that makes sense for gaming, which is different than movies, music, television, etc. Gaming is a little bit different in how those contracts were written, how the licensing was applied, how other media contributed to the game, like music, like how many times you look at the mess of music licensing that happens to old TV. Same thing is going to happen to games. So we need to have some kind of idea there where we can point to this and say, here is a path and here is a structure that makes sense for consumers to get their hands on old titles that can't be sold anymore. And that's one of the reasons why I'm personally a bit reluctant to focus hard on emulation in my sort of public-facing videos. Ultimately, I'm a dude who got his major career start in Hollywood. So I have very, not conservative, but like, I do believe in a certain aspect of copyright protection, IP and licensing, because that's how so many people in our profession get paid. You know, it's not just one payday for this one thing. It's that there's kind of an idea of media ownership and licensing, and that kind of follows you for a while. And that's how you kind of fulfill this living so that you can go on to make other projects. So I tend not to lean too hard on emulation because I also want to highlight the good work being done by developers making games natively. But then if I want to fire up a bunch of old school Doom WADs and like custom levels and like, you know, tweaked things that were all part of that shareware community, you know, classic Doom back in the day and Hexen and Heretic and all these, you know, these fun mods. Well, that to me is a perfect example of a shareware emulation economy, right? I don't need to own the original Doom to play some of these titles because of how those developers put their property out there for people to customize and alter. And that to me is really exciting. So the same thing, you know, PlayStation 2, one of the most popular eras of console gaming. Now there's a better emulator that can be accessible on Android devices. And I know for a certain community of people, that's going to be huge gaming. Like, this is really exciting stuff. And now you have access to this other library of games that can be played directly from your phone and played very, very well. Again, I don't know that we'll ever get it. For me, the era that I think I went the hardest on console gaming was the PS3. Which was dumb. It was really proper dumb. It wasn't like I was rationally thinking like, well, what will my future playability be if I get this PS3? No, I was just really excited about playing on a PS3. And unfortunately, that's the one that kind of burned me the hardest. So that's another reason why I was so heartbroken not to see the Steam Deck, see those launch times pushed, because you know, I want backwards compatibility, and I want, you know, complete, as near a complete accessibility to all of my games in my library. And still, the first best place to do that is PC gaming, which would have been awesome for the Steam Deck. And to me, the second best is Android. So it was a lot of feels over the week. You know, putting out different types of editorials, sharing some of my family memories. Talking about, you know, just again, getting more use out of a gadget. I'm putting together an editorial for reviews.org that will hopefully be out tomorrow or Wednesday, talking about how to improve video calls. And it's hilarious that I'm editing this video and my mom and dad call to talk to Lex, and they're doing all the things that I talk about in the video that you shouldn't do to improve your video calls. I got this great screenshot of like my mom and dad backlit by the New Mexico setting sun. And it's just like washing out like 60% of the frame. And I know my mom tends to listen through the beginning part of the podcast. So, hey, mom, you're going to be a part of a video. Salud. all right. Oh, Dave, if only I were that talented. Dave writes, you're letting the PC community down. Build your own Steam Deck like a true PCMR, Chad. I kind of feel like I need to revisit my Intel Nook. So, I was just talking about this Cooler Master keyboard. Cooler Master makes a better Nook enclosure. And I think I need to do just like a little mini rebuild, because the Nook case is cute and it's compact, but the screws strip really easy and it's kind of messy on the inside. And so I want to clean it out. Like, I've got that little NVIDIA 1660 Super, because mostly it's just for 1080p gaming. At the time I built it, I decided against trying to spend up on a 2060. At the time, we were like, the mini card to get was the 2060. I was like, I can save $50. Let me get that 1660. No idea that we were about to hit that huge GPU market crash and prices were going to skyrocket. And again, it was that box that I had to kick my own butt and stop making fun of it, because I got lucky. That was purely it. I bought at exactly the right time to put this Nook together. And it's been a great, sort of indie gaming, arcadey kind of gaming. My wife and I, we've been playing It Takes Two. Just an awesomely fun game. But, I'm playing it in 1080p on our massive 4K television. It looks awesome. It looks great. This is exactly what this little box was for. It's kind of this killer companion to other console gaming. Where I'm really caring a little bit more about frame rate than I am like the toppest, bestest visual fidelity. So I think I need to kind of do a revisit on that, where just putting a tiny little computer behind your TV has been kind of a lifesaver over the last couple of years of living during a pandemic. The Gormlord, hi mom, Pa Bagnell. Oh, that's awesome. And Dave, again, your window was spot on. I don't know if I got lucky, per se, but I own a 3090, MSRP from 2020. I'm still on my 2080 Ti for my main editing rig. There are already rumors about the next generation of NVIDIA GPUs, and it's just kind of vomitous thinking that, so many people who are still trying to build PCs can't even get their hands on current gen parts. I want to be excited, but what does it matter? I hate watching Hardware Unboxed and Gamers Nexus and just seeing like the defeat, like, we're going to benchmark this GPU, but it doesn't matter because you still can't buy it. And if we try and benchmark it at MSRP, that's a completely different conversation than if we benchmark it at street retail. And this sucks. You're like, yeah, kind of does. Like, they did a video a couple months back talking about like some of those older GPUs that, back in the day I thought were terrible, but I still have, was it like a GTX, was it 970? That was the real dog, upper mid-range GPU that NVIDIA put out years back. It's in a box somewhere. I mean, that could probably go in a build and at least get video out to someone who is lacking a component. I mean, that's how precious this entire market has been. It's just absolutely ridiculous. And Gormlord, absolutely true. For a lot of folks, going pre-built is not only cheaper, just going to be safer. I love the getting every component in its own box kind of a feel. I love putting that all together. That's the thing I miss most about doing my regular gigs with Newegg, was getting my hands into the guts of a box. That was like one of my first real jobs out of college, was imaging and provisioning Power Macs, those old school IBM Apple desktop workstations and ripping open the cover and putting in all the components that were built to spec and then putting in the imaging software, and just we'd have an assembly line. We were trying to get those computers out to Department of Energy facilities. And I loved that part of the gig. I really did. I just there's something so fun and mechanical. And you know, when I used to be able to work on my own car, I would give myself oil changes and tune-ups, and I would do my own brake jobs. I miss that kind of getting your hands dirty kind of a feel. But right now, my workstation's working well. I don't want to touch it. Like, I'm going to leave it alone and just let it ride. I would seriously consider my next PC being pre-built just so that I could get everything, know that I'm paying a markup on it, but not an insane markup per component, just one kind of big price increase for having someone else put it together for me. And Dave Burns also, yeah, the defeatism in the videos, and I think you're referencing Gamers Nexus and Hardware Unboxed too. The defeatism in the videos are so hard to watch. Let me get this out of the way here. And get that out of the way here. Oh, and Gabaletta. So this is the other project I need to do. Gabaletta writes, funny how my three-year-old laptop has aged so well. So I've got my old Razer. The battery is almost completely dead. So what is it? It's a seventh gen Core i7 with an NVIDIA 970 mobile. So it's kind of like having a GTX 960 inside that. I'm seriously considering just doing the battery swap instead of buying a new gaming or, you know, creator laptop. When that thing was running well, it was chewing through DaVinci Resolve. DaVinci Resolve just liked that hardware combo. And obviously not as powerful as my main editing rig here. It's even a little bit slower than editing a similar video in PowerDirector. But again, I'm neck and neck with my phones. It's still an incredible screen. It's a gorgeous display. It's a nice setup. If I clean out those fans and I replace that battery, I'm pretty confident I could still get a little bit more life out of it. It's not technically in line for Windows 11. I just don't care. I really don't. I feel like putting another battery in there, that could be my fallback machine for at least another year, maybe two. For the general needs that I might have for a computer like that. So I might just do that. And I think that could also be kind of a fun video in January. Like, hey, for Christmas, I bought myself a battery. And look, this laptop, still ridiculously capable. We're getting on like 6 years, 5 years, somewhere in there. Like, again, the whole notion that like I'd need to flip a laptop every 2 years is just so silly. It's just so silly. That's a great question. From Damn It Adrian, what keyboard do you use for your Nook for your TV? I have that little Logitech. It uses the USB adapter. It's not Bluetooth. But it's the Logitech combo. I can't remember what the model number is. It's the Logitech combo where there's a little trackpad off to the side, and then it's just like a QWERTY keyboard all in one. So it fits on my lap pretty well. It types okay. You know, again, you're kind of typing on your lap, so it's fiddly. But that's been working great. What I really do want to take a look at is the only thing we're really using that Nook for is gaming. Actually, it would be a pretty decent editing machine. That little Core i9 Nook is no joke. But again, there's no need for it. Like, if my main desktop goes down, I would need to piggyback on that Nook. But I really want to take a look at, like, is there maybe some other interface that we could kind of slap on this so I could go all controller and just navigate game libraries that way. But again, I have games in so many different little pocket libraries that I don't know that I can completely get away from Windows. So why don't we, housekeeping only took a half hour. Why don't we shift over, knock out some news here, and then we can get back to some of this gadget chat in the gadget block. Most of this week is like I said, it's been kind of a rough week for Apple, and I take no glee in sharing all of this news. I do a little bit. There's a little Schadenfreude because I just feel like there's still a consistency of messaging and advertising and marketing, and just like I was talking to Scott Peachy in some DMs, not to like air all of our dirty laundry, but there's still that like reality distortion field where I'm in the middle of a thread on our Apple, and it's almost exclusively praising the iPhone 13 Pro, and for very good reasons. You know, again, it's a premium tier smartphone with all of these great features, and Apple finally figured out that a larger battery might be a benefit to people. Screw you if you own an iPhone 12, the iPhone 13 is getting this part of it right. And someone drops this one little comment like, "Hey, I love this phone. It's completely changed up everything. I just wish it had a better telephoto camera." That's the critical misstep. That was the egregious sin that this iPhone-owning, iPhone-loving individual put into a comment on a thread praising the iPhone 13. "I just wish the telephoto were a little stronger." Ripple of comments, ripple of replies. "What do you need a better telephoto for? Maybe think about just..." Someone put it really snarky, like punch you in the face, you know, sneery, you know, poopy face, snarky. What was, how did, I forget how exactly they phrased it, but it was like, but it was kind of like that lean in, like, "Maybe just buy a regular camera with a good zoom on it." You know, kind of like, I forget exactly how it was written, but it just read with that kind of a tone. "I don't want my phone to be any thicker. Apple, you know, is giving us the best computational photography that no one else can touch it in good light." And what was the last one? Oh, and yeah, and again, it was "Maybe don't be such a creeper." Like, why you gotta be a peeping Tom? Like, oh my God. This one person who went out of his way to praise all these things about his new iPhone just got slaughtered in this Apple community for deigning to have any critical thing to say about the iPhone 13. And again, it just reinforces if you want to be successful on social media, especially in this tech bubble that we've created, number one, start with the logical fallacy that because Apple is successful, everything they do is correct. Step number two, if there's ever anything critical to say about Apple as a company, refer back to point number one. They're the most successful and they make the most money, so everything they do must be correct. And then step number three, you profit incredibly. And it just is, it's just been so ratcheted in that regard. So, with what little audience I can muster against a $2 trillion company with one of the largest and most aggressive PR attached departments, I would like to point out not everything Apple does is perfect. Man. Okay, so it's not to say like, you know, Pixel rules because of this one hardware feature, but having used the Pixel 6 Pro telephoto, there is definitely room to improve on the OnePlus and iPhone style of telephotos. So I feel like that's a completely fair statement. The Pixel 6 Pro telephoto is the first smartphone telephoto I've ever used where it made sense to use it indoors in less than ideal lighting, and that it genuinely works. It doesn't just bump you to the main sensor and then crop. You legitimately can use that telephoto indoors in the dark. It's real nice. I'm just saying.
Hey folks, are you getting bored of the current collection of tech and geek commentary on the internet? Is the discussion of new electronics feeling a bit stale? Do you want to find some fresh voices to add to your subscription queue? Check out the community on r glowing rectangles on Reddit. Now, this subreddit was built to help new voices in the tech community find more audience, and we need your support. Sharing, commenting, and those precious, tasty upvotes. Reddit can radically help a content creator expand their reach. Do you know a producer who deserves more attention? Do you just want to find fun new stuff? Head on over to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles and share or browse to your heart's content. Once again, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and let's build something cool together.
Well, and Steve, this has always been kind of the critical, sort of the critical barrier to this. Steve writes, I've seen a lot of praise for the Pixel's handling of skin tones on Twitter, but most replies were about Apple bringing that to iOS instead of, you know, buying a Pixel. And this has always been the kind of entrenched, you know, we're talking trench warfare between Android and iOS. Apple picks up a new UI feature and everyone praises it, and then people point out, hey, you've been able to do that on other phones. Before Apple had that feature wasn't worth it. App drawers? Who needs an app drawer? The iPhone is so simple and clean and sophisticated, just having panel after panel after panel of randomly installed apps. That's, you know, that's the right way to do it because Apple is the most profitable company. Oh, now there's an app library. This was the best way to do an app drawer, was Apple's app library. You see, you can always move the goalposts with that kind of reality distortion field, always confirm that Apple did the right thing style of tech commentary. Because if those UI features mattered to people, then they were missing out. They were missing out by owning an iPhone. If you cared about widgets and organizing and customizing, you definitely missed out if you were on an iPhone and you weren't playing with Android. Now, we're seeing some of that conflict between like messaging services. We have one group thread in my family where everyone is on an Android except for one person. And because that one iPhone owner is in our group thread, we can't use all of the new RCS messaging features. That one iPhone user is messing it up for everyone else. And it's interesting and it's kind of refreshing that now it's the Apple user who's breaking this group chat. Because the other solution that we've got would be way better if they weren't in the group chat. And again, Apple isn't going to jump on RCS. So I've got a story at the end of this that I kind of want to dig into just a little bit more. But we've always kind of catered that kind of tech commentary to confirming the bias of an iOS user so they feel better about their purchase. And now this is causing some problems in Android space, like especially premium tier Android is in real dangerous shape right now because the lopsided commentary makes it sound like no expensive phone could possibly be worth it, you know, except for maybe that iPhone Pro, because that's a good example of a premium phone. Everything else is different than the iPhone Pro, so it must not be worth it for the monies. So Apple's in trouble with the SEC. This one's kind of heady and political. So let's jump in. Written up by Market Insider, markets.businessinsider.com, Matt Drange. Apple told the SEC it doesn't silence employees regarding workplace harassment or discrimination, and a new whistleblower document shows that that isn't true. From the bullet points, the document demonstrates the lengths Apple will go to silence former employees. If we can't hold the biggest company in the world accountable, then who can we? Said Cher Scarlett, the Apple whistleblower from this article. Lawyers for Apple spelled out precisely what they wanted engineer Cher Scarlett to say following her recent departure from the company, limiting her words to only, quote, after 18 months at Apple, I've decided it is time to move on and pursue other opportunities. End quote. Language included in a strict non-disclosure and non-disparagement clause as part of a separation agreement Apple offered Scarlett last month struck Scarlett as, quote, ridiculous. Scarlett went on to say, I was shocked. In my mind, I should be able to say whatever I want as long as I'm not defaming Apple. And again, this is following Apple communicating with the SEC that they don't do things like this. So you get this kind of control of the media, control of the marketing, control of the reviewers, because you don't want to say anything too critical about an Apple product if you've got access to Apple review gear. So if you come in just a little too critical, you know, Apple's going to look at other opportunities and other reviewers and other content creators to make sure, you know, just the messaging. Maybe you just need to take a break. Maybe you're just not feeling the Apple vibe. And we wish you well. Go buy the products with all of the regular consumers after the SEO has plummeted for review videos. Because right now, the only thing that seems to make a difference is I got the product early. Yeah, tech reviewing is basically just who can say first the loudest and show off the prettiest B-roll. Actually using the product and assessing the product comes with a radical fall off of actual viewership, which directly impacts your profitability. And so Apple is very good at machining that early experience. Now it seems they're also pretty good at manufacturing the conversation surrounding their company as people leave their company. So this to me would be worthy of a pretty intense investigation from a regulatory agency like the SEC. So we'll have to see what comes of this. Again, this isn't one I feel like it's just getting started. We need to keep an eye on it. But it means that future contracts with people Apple is looking to pick up as employees, those people need to be very diligent about making sure there are clauses to protect their own ability to speak. They can talk with other employees about issues. They can call out bad behavior. Some of this is even coming down to people have reported discriminatory business practices, sexual harassment practices in Apple, and then haven't been allowed to say anything about it. So just as we're watching the video game industry melt down over horrible and toxic people sort of pervading all of these companies, it doesn't seem like, you know, a magical, glowing, happy place like Apple is really any much different. Like the Think Different company seems to be remarkably similar. And there was another article that came out too. I can't remember who put it out, but just like a look at Apple retail employees. You know, we're underpaid, we're overworked, people are melting down, bosses and management, unrealistic expectations, sales goals. And, you know, Apple is one of those companies that has held itself up and has marketed itself as this shining beacon, and it is not living up to that kind of marketing. It is not living up to that kind of messaging. Dave Burns. Hold on. What are you saying? Silicon Valley tech bro culture seems to proliferate? I, for one, am shocked. Shocked, I tell you. I am shocked. So gosh dang furious. So again, once we can talk about Apple as a trillion-dollar corporation that exists to provide value to shareholders and to extract as much value out of their consumer base as they can, then I feel we can have realistic conversations about what does this mean for the future of our hobby. Again, you're watching a video like mine is because you're into this kind of stuff, not because you're into the marketing of this kind of stuff. Another follow-up, Rolling Stone, of all places, got kind of a scoop on messaging data and how that relates to the FBI. And apparently, WhatsApp and iMessage are the two most coziest with the FBI in giving up data on people when they're served with subpoenas. So again, if you care about privacy and you care about security and all of these like grand ideas that are often showcased in Apple marketing, iMessage might not be the most private solution because of the way that it works server side, and Apple is going to give up the logs on that kind of stuff. It's definitely something that we'll need to keep an eye on as RCS makes more of an impact on the messaging industry, and then other services like Line and Telegram. I'm forgetting a bunch of them. I mean, like, I'm exhausted at the idea of having to talk to other people on other messaging platforms because I'm already overloaded. Like, between Discord and Slack and Teams and, you know, text messaging and email and DMs on various platforms, like, the idea of adding even more messaging services to talk to specific people just makes me want to roll under my duvet and throw my covers over my head. But this is a great write-up and this is a great read on the relationships that these companies have with law enforcement and with government agencies. So for those of you who are privacy and security minded, this is the kind of data you need to make those informed choices on what kinds of services that you would want to use. And then also, which services really do claim to be, or really do security and privacy to the same degree that their companies claim that they can. If we're just kind of going off of Apple says they're the most private, that's really not been true. I mean, again, you're making an ill-informed purchasing decision if that's how you've been kind of handling this conversation. It kind of goes back to like those classic Mac versus PC ads, right? Macs don't get viruses. Well, at the time, you know, when Justin Long was the face of Mac computers against, that stodgy old PC, no one was writing viruses or malware for Macs. Again, it was security through obscurity, not that it was any more actually secure. And this is definitely kind of coming to bite Apple today, is that they're not. They're not any better. They're not any more secure. They're definitely not any more private. And their current track, especially for on-device, content scanning, I feel is going to open up way more problems for people that care about protecting their data and protecting their security. JMX Warrior, Signal, and RCS. So yeah, there are so many. I in my head, I know Telegram. I was joking, like maybe I just need to kind of write my own friends and family encrypted chat. Like again, for everyone but the iPhone family member, I can send them an APK and it's just a direct link to us. And that's it. It's a very private club, but I'll just keep it totally locked down. No other third party, no other outside influence. I'll rip off, sort of old school chat protocols and then just encrypt this schnig out of it. I feel like there might be a market for that. Or yes, we could also do this too, Aditya. We could just go back to Morse code and sign language. I love it. And Dave Burns is using Signal too. Okay, I'll check out Signal. I just, again, like I said, it makes me want to cry having to install another messenger. In news not directly related to Apple, but tangentially could affect Apple, who's down for some hot, juicy regulatory gossip? Yeah, the hot goss? So this one could be pretty massive. The FTC is pushing back against NVIDIA trying to buy ARM. This is written up by Gordon Ung over at PC World. ARM is, of course, the outlet that designs all of these fancy SoCs and sets the standard for mobile processors. And NVIDIA wants to own them. But the FTC is jumping in to say that this is a huge conflict of interest. Like this is a regulatory action that could completely shut down this acquisition. And if this acquisition falls apart, I think NVIDIA is on the hook for something like roughly $2 billion. Like it just evaporates. Like they just, it's gone. NVIDIA just loses that cash that's being invested into buying out this property. But the FTC's reasoning is pretty sound. NVIDIA is a corporation that makes a substantial amount of money on these types of compute platforms. And if they own ARM, then ARM is responsible for reaching out to all of these other manufacturers to kind of glean market data on what the next generation of silicon needs to have, needs to include. We're about to hit the new Snapdragon, the new MediaTek, the new Exynos. These are all loosely tied into this ARM framework and ARM reference designs. And all of these major outlets and corporations are talking to ARM, giving them proprietary information and proprietary data to help influence the next generation of SoC design. So if NVIDIA gets that, they get all of the proprietary information from Qualcomm, from Samsung, probably a fair amount of data from Apple. Every one of those companies is going to be funneling information into this organization. And I feel like the FTC has a fantastically strong argument to say, this might not be a great idea. So This is absolutely one to keep an eye on in the whole political sphere, in the regulatory sphere, because the FTC doesn't hit hard like this as often. Again, the rules that, you know, what the FTC does as a government regulatory agency are very narrowly defined. And, you know, there's a lot that a corporation or a company can kind of get away with so long as they're disclosing these business practices, or they're highlighting these, or consumers are informed through the terms of service. The FTC is often kind of bound from enacting more punitive measures. So when something like this goes down, it's kind of a big deal, kind of like a real big deal, like big. It's a bigly big deal for reals. And, you know, I mean, there could be some good that comes out of NVIDIA being able to control the entire, you know, market, future design of the processors and GPUs that go into our phones. I feel a lot of people have been rightfully a little anxious about this. And the FTC, I think, perfectly summed up what some of the potential issues might be with this kind of acquisition. So keep an eye on it. Again, everything that we're going to be talking about this week, all the links and all of the articles will be in the show notes on somegadgetguy.com. And then I just wanted to wrap up our news block with one just cute little, and literally cute and little, scientific achievements. This was shared on the Discord. I can't remember who shared it. I'm so sorry. But it's some camera tech. And it's interesting camera tech because a couple months back, we talked about there was a team of researchers that were figuring out how to make better and more compressed lenses through fiber optic design. So instead of just like numerous elements that are all kind of stacked together, that requires depth. Even in a smartphone camera, there are multiple elements of glass and lenses that go into making that camera lens. There were a team of researchers that were trying to figure out ways that we could maybe use fiber optic channeling to kind of route light in a more space efficient package. And that, you know, this was really, really like, you know, bleeding edge, tip of the spear stuff, but that we were starting to make progress on this kind of concept. Now, a combination of printing fabrication and machine learning software is achieving an incredible new style of lens design. So this was written up by Molly Sharlock at Princeton University. This is their engineering website. And it's a teeny tiny little lens. It's a lens. Let me actually just read from the article here. Researchers at Princeton University and University of Washington have developed an ultra compact camera the size of a coarse grain of salt. And the system relies on a technology called a metasurface, which is studded with 1.6 million cylindrical posts and can be produced much more like a computer chip. And the image they show is courtesy of the researchers, but it is. It's all of these stacked teeny tiny little tubes, and it fits in. So we've been trying to use like cameras that can kind of go inside the human body. This is a lot of medical tech, but this technology could have a profound impact on consumer tech in roughly the next 5 to 8 years. But it's kind of exciting to see how we can squish all of this down and further reduce size. So one of the images they show, the current solutions have massive problems with image and signal and putting all of this color data together so that you get an image that you can actually use, especially when you're in like a part of the human body. Like this is difficult. So going back into the article, on the left is this blurry mess of ISO noise and color fringing and ghosting, and the images don't even line up properly between the red and blue subpixels. And then this new neural nano optic that they've created can reasonably show an image that looks phenomenally clearer. So if we were to apply this kind of technology to something that doesn't need to be hyper miniaturized, we could be looking at the future of lens design for stacked optics that are much shallower. So like say we want to put a ginormous camera sensor on the back of a phone, if we can improve this type of printed lens manufacturing concept, we wouldn't need all of this ridiculous extra depth. You know, like, you know, this huge bulge on the back of a pixel is because of the larger optic for the main camera and the periscoping optic for the telephoto. You need all of this additional cavernous space to make sure everything can kind of stack appropriately. That's, you know, in 5 years, that's what we could be looking at, is a camera sensor that's almost completely flush and flat against the back of the phone, requiring so much less depth to be made up on the inside of the phone. So it's cool stuff. It's cool tech, and could significantly, it wouldn't significantly improve our photography capabilities compared to more traditional setups, but it would improve our ability to put larger sensors into less space. So obviously, medical, science, engineering, those applications make a lot more sense first. But moving forward, we could see some crazy stuff making its way to consumers. Hold on one second. I just need to take a drink of water here. I'm kind of playing with muting some of all of the, you know, swallowing and slurping sounds, because I don't like listening to my own podcast sometimes. yes, Russ, exactly. You could take a 1-inch sensor that shrinks in size but retains the sensor size just in a smaller form factor. The problem is depth. You know, again, why I feel Sony did such a significant crop on the 1-inch sensor in the Xperia Pro I was also to make sure they didn't need to stack lenses in a way that would make a huge bulge off the back of that phone. Dave Burns, we don't like listening to your podcast either. Hashtag hate watch. Oh, you're my favorite troll. And Fat Produce, this is big news for espionage tech. Mac Hall, but yeah, this feels super creepy. I completely agree. We're going to live in a society where a grain of salt can be a fully functioning camera. I think it's going to take a little while for that to reach any kind of proliferation in a way that will be infringing on people's rights. But to me, the next step for this out of the scientific community, because again, what we were talking about is like, if we're talking about a lens built to be inside a human body, you're speaking about a very specific focal range, lighting conditions, accessibility. It doesn't immediately transfer into, oh, and now like I can stick a camera on like a smoke detector and spy on you in a hotel room. Like, that still takes a bit to evolve and become accessible at prices where it makes sense for that kind of everyday espionage. But the next major application I can think of is consumer tech. And if that means that we can have a flatter, larger camera sensor attached to our phone, then I think that's kind of interesting. So this is a very complicated question, Sveticus, that I don't know that I can properly answer in the context of the hour we have left. But Sveticus writes, I'm new to RCS. I thought iMessage was the standard. Can you explain why RCS might be better, please? Well, iMessage is not a standard. A standard is something that's openly accessible to anyone who might want to use it. So SMS is a standard. That is a carrier-backed technology for sending small messages, small text-based messages over the communication pipeline that was also built to send emergency notifications. That's a standard. Everyone has access to it. iMessage is a completely locked down, walled garden, proprietary, data-based messaging service. So your message goes through an Apple server, and Apple looks and sees, you're sending this message to another iPhone user, we're going to send it as a chunk of data, and that improves on your ability to add rich data to that message. If it's a GIF, or if it's a video, or if it's a photo, we know it's going to another iPhone user, so we can send a higher quality data bit along with it. The photo has higher fidelity, the video has better clarity, the audio is higher quality. That's what iMessage is. It's basically just a data-based messaging platform. If you send that message up to an Apple server and then it's going to an Android user, they try to shift it off into more of a traditional SMS or MMS style delivery. And that's all it is. It's just funneling in one direction or the other. RCS is a standard. RCS is a mess. Everyone tried to have their own flavor of RCS or control the direction of RCS. The carriers kind of got involved. They said they were going to come up with their own messaging apps. They eventually balked. Google kind of took the reins and said, hey, we're just going to build it into Android Messenger. And then the carriers went, cool, we don't have to do it. So they let Google sort of dictate, especially in North America, not so much in Europe or in Asia, but especially in North America, the main protocol or the main distribution, the main vibe is heavily Google influenced, but it's going to be the accessible standard for everyone else. Everyone else, as their text messaging services improve, it's going to be built on the back of RCS. Apple is digging in their heels and they're not going, it doesn't seem like they're going to contribute or they're going to allow iMessage to have an RCS component. So they're going to keep iMessage locked up, which means increasingly as the messaging services improve on Android, it's iMessage that's going to make everything broken. And so then it looks like, well, the only way that you can really have good messaging is if you just all own iPhones. It's a horrible, cynical, and tactical business move on Apple to make everything worse for everyone else so that you feel like you should own an iPhone instead. But it's kind of curious that because RCS does have a little bit more of a server-side component than traditional SMS and MMS, Google is starting to do things that can kind of help bridge that. So if you've ever been in a group chat and instead of getting the little emojis, like so-and-so liked this comment, so-and-so loved this comment, you get all of those text message replies. It's so annoying. That's because of iMessage. iMessage is breaking that group chat because of the way that Apple handles emojis versus the way that RCS would handle emojis. And so a future update to Messenger is actually going to take that text. Whenever that text shows up, they're going to shift it and turn that into an emoji that shows up in your text messaging. But we've got to jump through those hoops. Everyone else, every Android manufacturer, every Android messaging developer, every carrier needs to figure out how to handle iMessage communications. Instead of Apple just saying, hey, we're going to start incorporating RCS into iMessage, the entire rest of the industry has to fix what Apple is breaking. And that's what's so annoying. So no, iMessage is not a standard. iMessage is a proprietary Apple application that no one else is allowed access to. And that's stupid. Like, I don't know any nicer way to say it. That's dumb. It harms competition. And it reduces progress on all of this communication nonsense. Well, but again, Svetica says, like, and I meant standard is in the bar to shoot for. I mean, it doesn't work great, especially try and leave iMessage. If I leave one Android phone for another phone, I can still reliably count on SMS. You know, like, I always have a fallback where I can still communicate with people. Leaving the iPhone, like, I am so reluctant to ever really attach my phone number to anything Apple. Because trying to pull it away from an iPhone is unnecessarily painful. So again, a standard also needs to be something that you can reliably leave. If it's too locked in and too locked up, that is not a good standard. That is not something to shoot for. And that's not something we as tech enthusiasts should ever have to suffer. If I want to leave Android and I want to go to like Linux, you know, like my ability to just yank out a SIM card and jump into something new and start communicating should be just that. Just like on old candy bar brick phones that I was T9 SMSing with, I should be able to do the same. That to me is the goal to shoot for, is clear, open, accessible, protected communication, reasonably, sort of fun for other kinds of features. And for as much as iMessage gets it right for locking in iPhone owners, they break it for everyone else. And then they make it extremely painful to leave. And that to me is an anti-consumer business practice. That I mean, it's like the definition of anti-consumer. Is it only serves to benefit Apple. So iMessage was great when we were in that mess of like, what's going to go on with Hangouts, Allo, and Duo. But increasingly, like, more of my family is now video calling over Duo. My not young grandmother Duo calls my daughter on her iPad. She doesn't FaceTime. She Duo calls. I mean, things like that. Like, this whole notion of Apple has the bestest ecosystem. They don't, because no one else can join it. And no one else can communicate with it. Again, they have the best lock-in. They don't have the best set of tools to really enable a broader or a more efficient kind of communication. And increasingly in my family, like, we're finding these other opportunities and these other ways to branch that out. But more and more, it's the iPhone users that are breaking all of this stuff. Like, the perfect example is a text thread where we can't use emojis properly because of one iPhone user. And that's a bummer. So that's not something to shoot for. If you show up and you break the group project, you're not the person we should be looking to. You're not the standard that we should be trying to engage with or to try and highlight. I love it. All right, here, let's jump into a quick subreddit plug. This was an interesting week on the subreddit because I'm trying to play a game, maybe a little inspired by all of the Reddit communities that are trying to copy Squid Game. I just knocked my table pretty hard there. Sorry. If you're watching the video stream, it just looks like I had a mini earthquake. Let me get this up here. So, subreddit, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. Real solid week. We picked up a lot of new subscribers, a lot of new users. We got some great articles shared. I want to jump in with the top articles of the week. A number one, a brilliant write-up by user Mott427, Tab S7 Plus as a software developer. This isn't an article posted, a link, or a video. They just wrote this up as its own post here. And just talking about what it's like to use a tablet to do a lot of software development work. And it's a really great write-up on how to use a mobile-focused product as a primary, as a proper computer. Really, really good stuff. Then, Google 6 Pro tempered glass screen protector installation. Yes, the fingerprint scanner works, from Gadget Goddess. She's got a great channel. You should absolutely be subscribed to all the crew. Gadget Goddess and Barry Johnson and Holler at Your Boy, that's LaShawn, and Bionic Scoop and Easy Computer Solutions, and I always miss some of them and I can't remember. But great crew, and I love watching their live streams, but their standalone videos are awesome too. So I need to jump on this because I have a plastic screen protector on my Pixel 6 Pro and it's garbage and I hate it. So it's no fun. Then number three, Vivo X70 Pro Plus from Grant Likes Tech. He's unboxing the blue leather version of the X70 Pro Plus. And I'd be lying if I said I wasn't a little jealous of that blue because it looks real good. But the X70 Pro Plus has just been a monster phone to talk about. Excuse me. Number four, this is a fun podcast. I've been a guest a couple times. The Augmented Experience podcast. Josh records this out of Texas. Real talk, practicing gratefulness. That hit our number four spot. And number five, a channel update from Explaining Computers. Just chatting about what the channel is going to be doing. We had Lenovo commentary. We had gaming commentary. We have some industry talk, just, you know, carriers and ISPs. Someone checking out the Z Flip 3 is a gaming solution. Motorola Edge 20 Pro review from Ryan Thomas. And of course, we always have a regular contribution from Gary Explains, breaking down the new Snapdragon processors. Just really good week on the subreddit. But at the very tip top, I started with the actual articles. These are the things that people really submitted. I've been playing a game, and I'm calling the game the Alternative Phone Brand Elimination Challenge, where I have a bracket of 36 companies, a 6x6 grid, and we're voting individual companies off of the island. See who had the weakest year every day that we put out a new bracket to eventually arrive at who had the strongest year in 2021. I didn't put Apple or Samsung on this. I wanted to focus on every other company that really just is underserved for commentary and for coverage. I pre-eliminated BlackBerry because Onward Mobility turned into a vaporware, and I'm not too surprised that that happened. But if you go to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, Let me go back. Stickied at the top of the subreddit. Let me make sure. Yeah, it's stickied. You will find the new bracket with all of the companies that have been eliminated so far. We voted off HTC. We voted off Alcatel. We voted off, the most recent was Huawei. And of course, LG, they made it a whole day. I was really proud of LG. They weren't voted off first. So even without releasing a new phone in 2021, LG was still, I believe the last quarter, LG was the number four smartphone sales in the United States. And they've also done a pretty decent job of putting out software. You know, the V50 has beaten the Surface Duo, the original Duo 1, for getting Android 11. So, you know, in LG actually having a pretty strong year by LG standards. They were the number three brand for the first two quarters. Now they're the number four brand. They fell behind Motorola this last quarter for sales in North America. And I got to say, you know, that's still a really strong showing. Like, I believe LG is still outselling OnePlus in the United States. So coming up next, we do have the new bracket out, and I wanted to see, let me see if I can, oh, not a lot of votes on it, but we can at least look at some early voting. Let's see, I think we've got a, yep, we got a three-way tie going between Cat, Doji, and Nokia. The new bracket is out on reddit.com. Voting will go until 9 a.m. tomorrow, where I'll flip it and eliminate another brand and go again. But this has just been kind of fun. Like, I eventually, we're getting closer and closer to eliminating the companies that have had kind of reasonably weak years. You know, like, I kind of feel like Nokia probably just recently had some bad press with the Nokia 9. They're bailing on giving the Nokia 9 Android 11, which absolutely breaks my heart. And TechAlter, like, kind of went off on the company, and deservedly, I feel, saying, like, I'll never recommend or I'll never buy another HMD product again, especially from the premium tier. This is just a terrible way to promise something to your consumers and then go, oops, no, we really can't. And that's killing me. The Nokia 9 was the phone I think I was the most fair to, because my review style is not, I'm going to put out a review and a camera deep dive the week it comes out. I am very much, the lived in experience of owning this phone is going to be totally different after an update or two. And I went months on the Nokia 9 kind of slow playing, like, this is ambitious. I want to give them plenty of runway. I would never judge Apple this harshly if they were having these kinds of issues. I want Nokia to have the same kind of consideration. And time again, they just kept letting me down. You know, fingerprint sensor issues, camera issues, stability issues. And even though it's an Android One branded device, you know, just the bare minimum of getting security patches and now saying, oh, we're just not going to do Android 11. Oopsies, our bad, is not okay. Nokia's big solution was to offer, oh, if you bought a Nokia 9, we'll sell you a new mid-range phone at half price. Spend more money with us. Like, nope, I can't do it. I can't recommend it. That's garbage. So that's my vote. I voted Nokia for this next bracket. Reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. The alt phone brand elimination challenge is going strong. This new bracket just went up as we started the podcast. It's definitely, I think it's going to be interesting to see in about a week. If there's a tie, we'll eliminate both companies that tie. But we're getting really close to having to make some hard choices. You know, I really feel, if I were putting money down in Vegas at the beginning of this bracket, my feeling is we'll probably get down to Poco versus Xiaomi. They're separate labels. We know they're owned by the same company, but they're built to different spec. They're shipped to different regions and they're sold under different labels. And so that to me, I think, is going to be one of the most brutal votes once we start getting down to the end of this bracket. I really feel it's going to be a hard showdown between Xiaomi and Poco for who had the best year in 2021. So this is fun, just a bit of fun. I don't want this to be snarky or too poopy. I don't want people to come in and be like, oh, if you liked that phone, you're an idiot. You know, like, it's not that. We're not we're not trying to really, you know, crap on these companies, but instead of doing just a best of the year generic poll where Apple or Samsung will win because people overwhelmingly in North America buy those two brands only, I wanted to do something that highlighted the insane number of other companies that we just don't hear about as often. 36 other smartphone brands. And like, I even had to cut a bunch of smaller sub-labels off this list from other kind of like ODM kinds of companies. Like, I wanted to put Palm on there because they do still technically sell a phone and they just came out with earbuds this year, but I just couldn't put them on. Like, they just didn't fit. And so I wanted to start with the joke of, you know, BlackBerry couldn't get a phone out this year. We'll just vote, we'll immediately eliminate them from the bracket just to show how all of this stuff works.
Just a quick interjection here, folks. I love highlighting good work and talented people, producers and writers who deserve more attention. So here's a quick word from someone making cool stuff on the internet, and I hope you check out what they have to offer.
Thanks, Juan Carlos, for allowing me to be part of your show. And I want to introduce myself to you guys. My name is TK Bay, and I've been doing YouTube for quite some time, almost 10 years now. And you can find me online by just looking for TK Bay either on Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, Facebook. But the general consensus is I'm a tech reviewer. I provide an interesting way of approaching tech by the same way you would actually go ask your friend for help. That's generally the consensus of how my channel runs. I review anything from Android, iOS, PC computers, scooters, basically, you know, drones, anything that you think of as consumer tech. I generally try to get my hands on it and share with you guys my opinions, and of course any troubleshooting or even tips and tricks that can help you enjoy your tech even better. Again, thank you very much to Juan Carlos, but if you'd like to check me out, just look for at TKDSL8655 on Instagram and Twitter, or TK Bay in YouTube.
So let's see. Oh, Aditya is saying that it's going to be Xiaomi versus Google this year. I don't know. I mean, again, this is a pretty, even for glowing rectangles, there's a lot of tech enthusiasm. Like, I would say LG had a stronger year than Nokia. LG had a stronger year than Alcatel. LG had a stronger year than Blue. Because it's not just, did they sell the most as phones? Did they live up to their commitments? Did they handle their support? Did they put out software updates? And all of those things combined, I would say LG did better than a number of companies that are still in the running. Like, overwhelmingly, LG sold more phones than Cat, Doji, and you know, like HMD in the United States combined. But, you know, again, it's the perception of each brand. And we have enough nerds in there who are gonna like cross their arms and they're gonna pout and they're gonna, Google can't do anything right. I would buy a Google if it were worth it, but they just keep doing everything wrong. And so I feel like as we start getting to the narrow bracket, Google is going to get voted out pretty early in the top bracket. Microsoft will get dumped pretty early in the top bracket. That's why I refuse to include Samsung or Apple, because they'll just tie up, you know, sort of the mind share of all of this. I really wanted people to kind of think, what year did this company really have? Not what's sort of generically the most populars, because that's lame and that's boring. And we already know what the result for that would have been. So yeah, Huawei just got voted off yesterday. I took a break on Sunday, but then it would be, we'll have to see where this next vote goes. And we're going to keep plugging away until we get down to one, the ultimate glowing rectangles alternative smartphone brand of 2021. So your vote matters. And every day you got to come back and make sure you hit that new bracket. Love it. Love it. All right, why don't we cover some gadget block here, where Apple also had kind of a weak week. This is not a great week for Apple. First of all, who remembers, and I want to see in the chat, so be ready to comment in the chat here, who remembers a couple weeks back, more than a couple weeks back, maybe about a month back, we were talking about iPhone manufacturing and how Apple was cutting back on orders, right? And Apple's reasoning for cutting back on orders and distribution was component shortages. During that podcast, I said I don't remember exactly what I said, not like as an exact quote, but I pointed out, to me, I don't believe a company like Apple would be cutting orders, again, because you've got to talk about the entire distribution and the chain and the assembly of these phones. So cutting back is a huge part of the entire chain of operations. It's not just, we couldn't get this one Broadcom Bluetooth radio, better tell the assembly companies to stop making as many iPhones. If the demand is high, you would still want those orders in place so that those assembly lines are fulfilling as many orders as they can as those components come in. You don't just cut orders. So to me, my theory was, last year, the iPhone 12s and the 12 Pros especially got a big surge in sales because of the people out there who had a little extra cash thanks to the stimulus checks that were being sent out. And this is a big problem for Android. Android premium devices don't hold the same cachet. So a bunch of people went, hey, you know what? I can afford that iPhone 12 Pro. I can afford the nice iPhone. I can show it off. I got a little bit of money that just dumped into my bank account. Let me treat myself in the middle of a global pandemic and feel good about something. And I think that's where the more expensive iPhones got a surge. They got a little bit of a nudge. This year, we're not sending out those stimulus checks. And during that podcast, I pointed that out and I said, let's keep an eye on how this is going to go down. Because I think Apple's going to see a market correction from the year before. People spent cash that they got through stimulus efforts on those iPhones. People aren't going to have that cash this year. And so I feel like the iPhone 13, even though it's in every measure, it is the better phone over the iPhone 12, it's not going to reflect the same. So Ars Technica just put out an article. Apple will make fewer iPhones in response to weakening demand and supply. So this is written up by Samuel Axon over at Ars Technica. Obviously, Apple is still going to be one of the most dominant forces in smartphone manufacturing as we close out 2021 and we start looking to next year. The iPhone is still going to be one of the top standalone phone lines in North America, especially. But it looks like they're cutting back another 10 million. Hold on, let me see. Apple planned to ship 90 million iPhone 13, 13 mini, 13 Pro, 13 Pro Max devices to consumers. Company cut its production targets by 10 million phones due to part shortages. Consumers, meanwhile, have faced wait times on the iPhone 13 orders of 2, 3, or even 4 weeks since the phone's launch in September. Apple initially told vendors it would make up that 10 million units again in early 22, once supply improved. But according to the Bloomberg report, Apple has noticed weakening demand, and the company no longer intends to hit that 90 million target in that time frame. So, it wasn't just, oh, we couldn't get Broadcom radios. The sort of demand is already starting to chill a little bit on that sales surge that Apple was expecting. So that's a different conversation than just, oh, we can't get the parts. It's, oh, we've kind of already fulfilled this part of the demand, and as we're making these products, we're fulfilling those orders, but the number of people shopping those phones isn't as high as we originally estimated it would be. So that's different. That is a different part of the conversation that I was correct on. And I just like to pat myself on the back here for just a second, because if it's economics, you know, I'm all about supply and demand. I'm pretty good at calling that stuff. So yeah, I think the iPhone sales surge kind of upset some of that forecasting, because it definitely throws out of whack who would have been upgrading and who, because like the time frame, especially getting into like 3 and 4 year old phones, maybe some of those people jumped a little earlier than they otherwise normally would have. And that's going to cut into iPhone 13 and iPhone 14 sales moving forward. It's pretty interesting stuff. I definitely feel like, this will be a fun thing to kind of track as we look back, you know, just like market forces during the pandemic. how it upset components, how it upset distribution. It definitely impacted global politics, as the United States is kind of in a constant headbutting showdown with China. I mean, the entire thing is going to be like, that's, to me, would be the most fascinating aspect of historical finance and consumer behavioral patterns. Like, you look back on this in 10 years and just go like, wow, this was a mess. How did any of this work in a global economy? It's insane. Sorry, I'm just catching up with the chat right here. Some folks bringing up laptops. Well, we're not talking about laptops. We're talking about smartphones. You know, demand is going to spike and ebb and flow, but Apple, I think, grossly overestimated the number of people that were going to jump on new iPhones, and that's what we're talking about. See, and McCorcoran, this is exactly the kind of point I've been trying to make since the iPhone 6S. McCorcoran writes, in hindsight, it would have made more sense to wait for the iPhone 13, where at least you get the efficient battery life. Since the iPhone 6S, every single time we've had kind of a platform shift on Apple, it's always made more sense to wait for the S variant. iPhone 6, well, iPhone 5 even. Yeah, iPhone 5, we had battery issues that were solved on the iPhone 5S and then even further improved on the iPhone SE, the first generation iPhone SE. iPhone 6 had bend gate. iPhone 6S solved that. But then from the iPhone 6 all the way through the iPhone 8, we've had issues with flex damage, bend damage, touch disease, component failure, screen failure, home button failure, fingerprint sensor failure. These phones have all systemically had the same problems, even though we fixed the ability to just like bend them with your hand or bend them in your pocket. But again, Apple makes the bestest hardware. What is it, iPhone 10? iPhone XS brought a better camera, but the iPhone XS was horribly updated by Apple. I mean, that was just the redheaded stepchild of iPhone. So we get into the iPhone 11, to the iPhone 12, to the iPhone 13. The iPhone 12 kind of represents that first gen, right? It's the first 5G generation. Of course, there are issues with it. And of course, the battery life sucks. And so the iPhone 13 is technically an iPhone 12S, but they solved all the problems with the iPhone 12. So that, again, kind of gets us back on track and reinforcing the better iPhone. It's not as sexy because it's not the new design form factor, but it's the better phone. A year of refining. They didn't do anything fancy to the radio management. They just slapped in a bigger battery, but that's still a tangible consumer perk. So if you wanted an iPhone that didn't die crazy fast if you had 5G service, it's the iPhone 13, which is technically an iPhone 12S. it's fun. The other story that came out, and again, I'm kind of just piggybacking on Ars Technica for these when it comes to like the sales and the security side. Who could have foreseen that Apple, running out of their way to make a device location tracking product, would run into issues with privacy and security? No one could have foreseen that AirTags would be a problem, except for all the people who predicted that AirTags would be a problem. I was part of that. I feel their implementation was horribly unconsidered for all of the other people that are using older iPhones and Android devices. Guys like Scott Peachy were out there saying like, hey, I work in security. This is a bad idea, the way this is being implemented. And also it was just a bad look for Apple because they would never allow another manufacturer to just opt people into location tracking. If you're using any of the Find My iPhone stuff features, you're a part of a global location tracking network that powers the AirTags. You just opted in. Congratulations. If you don't have any AirTags, you're still a tracking beacon for all of Apple's stuff. They'd never let, Tile do something like that. But they're cool doing it themselves. So again, you know, like, oh, we'll make Facebook disclose all of their marketing and data tracking, but if we do it, it's totally fine because we're Apple. Well, wouldn't you know it, people have been figuring out how to abuse AirTags. And so now it's becoming a bigger issue in Canada, where thieves are using AirTags to track really expensive cars and steal them. This is a kind of a hilarious application, because this is immediately one of the first things that we thought of with AirTags. I forget, who was it? He was another, it's another larger YouTube channel where he stuck an AirTag to like the back of a truck and it never set off the proximity alarm and he was able to track this person's vehicle. Please, someone remind me. I don't want to forget who it was that, like, as soon as AirTags were available to purchase, like, he made this video. Travis, thank you, Aditya Anil, Travis MCP. So again, Apple, as a trillion-dollar corporation with the best and brightest in their engineering team, couldn't foresee an issue with AirTags being abused this way. Travis MCP had a video out like the week they came out saying, hey, by the way, this doesn't work. Your privacy and your security features on AirTags are bogus. And now people are genuinely now engaging with AirTags for criminal ventures. AirTags are basically just gateways to criminal activity. You heard it here first, folks. Apple endorses car thieves. That's the only conclusion I can come to, because otherwise they would have made it just works, and it would have been a completely bug-free experience. Because isn't everything Apple does totally bug-free and totally perfect, and they always get it right, and you never have to worry about updates or anything, even though they always have a bunch of updates, but that's different. AirTags are a mess. Again, it's just so frustrating, because like the whole concept is cool. And again, Apple is ripping off another company's business model and building it into their own proprietary customer data network, their own proprietary consumer tracking network. But like the tech makes sense. It's just, as soon as you start talking about personal identifying information and location data, how could you be so blind? How could you be so stupid to the notion that this could be abused? It's a short radio bounce that gives up location data. Immediately, if I were building this and if I were in charge of a company like Tile, my first thought wouldn't be, how can we make sure this only works for our consumer base? My first thought would be, how do we work with the Bluetooth special interest group to make sure that built into the core kernel of Bluetooth 5.2 or 5.3 is some kind of auto trigger notification that alerts someone to the idea, to the fact that in their proximity is a location tracking device. You already have this now in the newest versions of headphones. You buy a new pair of headphones, you open the box, you turn them on, or you open the case, and your phone pops up with a notification saying, Bluetooth headphones are near you. Do you want to pair with them? This is now a core aspect of the Bluetooth kernel. And as soon as AirTags came out, and they were a proprietary Apple standard, the first thought I had, the first thought Scott had, the first thought Travis had was, why isn't this a notifying device in the same way that our Bluetooth headphones ping some kind of notification from our phone? And that way, if you're on an Android device, if you're on an older iPhone, you don't have to worry about someone tracking you with an AirTag. You can just, you'll get some kind of pop-up saying, hey, you've been driving around. We detect that there is a location tracking device in your general proximity. And you're traveling at 70 miles an hour, and we're still keeping this ping going. It's obviously on your car somewhere. You know, like, that to me is like the most fundamental, the basic, the most responsible idea at the lowest possible level, you clear that kind of privacy hurdle first. If you're a corporation who spends billions of dollars a year advertising your privacy and your security, that to me is a no-brainer. If your privacy and your security marketing are just marketing, that to me would speak to a company that continuously drops the ball on living up to the standard that they advertise. And now, AirTags are being used to facilitate car theft. I mean, like, it's getting pretty clear that this doesn't work the way that Apple is claiming it should work. It doesn't work. And now we need to do another round of how do we solve Apple's problem? How do we notify Android users that there's a location tracking device in their proximity? The Bluetooth special interest group is going to have to backtrack on this kind of stuff to make sure that they can come up with some kind of solution. Law enforcement's also going to have to get involved. Regulatory agencies are also going to have to get involved. And it's a huge mess because a handful of Apple engineers could not foresee that locking it up to Apple services only might be a problem. Who could have thunk it? Garbage. Straight, flaming, poopy garbage. Hate it. Well, yeah, Dave, this is obviously true. Dave writes, marketing is cheaper than security. So says Apple's finance department. Oh, it's so bad. It's just a bummer. Because again, something like this has such a tangible consumer benefit. I want a keychain that helps alert me to when I lose my keys. You know, I want tiles and trackers and things that can be more appropriately implemented. And then also, I would like to opt in to a network of products that if someone else finds my stuff, it can help get it back to me. I don't have it. It's in my closet. STM and Book bags used to have those little like barcodes and stuff where you could, it was opt-in. Someone caught the serial number or found a bag and they scanned the barcode. They could find some way of getting the bag back to you. You know, like stuff like that. I feel like there's so much opportunity and there's so much goodwill. And more often than not, people genuinely want to do the right thing. These are good products. But how do you fundamentally miss this one glaring security issue with a product that's so obvious to everyone else when they start hearing about how this is going to go down? And again, what did we hear? We heard from a bunch of tech reviewers. We heard from a bunch of Apple loyalists. Oh, they're going to figure it out. Apple's going to have a solution. All you need to do is update your iPhone. You're going to be fine. Maybe, you know, if it's a problem for Android people, maybe they should just switch to iPhones. And you're like, time and time again, they didn't really dot all their I's and cross all their T's. They put out an unfinished product that doesn't live up to their corporate and marketing standards. And now we have to figure out solutions where that could have just been built into the product from the very beginning. That kind of, again, it just drives me crazy. How many times are we going to keep apologizing for Apple making missteps like these? At the same time, they're setting the loudest and the highest threshold for their corporate policies. Because they don't live up to that marketing. Sorry, I'm done now. So, moving on. Who wants to talk about Pixel 6a rumors? So I put myself out there saying the A series should die, that Google should discontinue the A series phones. If this comes true, I mean, I put it out there. Like, I felt like that to me made the most sense as a business strategy. But we were getting some leaks. Like, this one's coming by way of Impulkits. I don't know who Impulkits.com is. But this is the first article that I caught, you know, kind of sharing some of these leaked photos and stuff on leaks. put out the leak. But we could be looking early next year, a Pixel 6a using a Tensor chip, but using some older camera sensors. So we're assuming it's probably going to be the combo of cameras that were on the Pixel 5a. So another year of that 1 over 2.55 inch sensor, the same ultra wide, but you know, again, a pretty decently sized battery, probably some kind of, you know, I would say higher refresh rate display. I don't know if they actually have anything on this rumor right here for that. But maybe like a 90 hertz display, kind of Pixel 5 style. But I mean, it could be kind of interesting bringing the design language to the Pixel 6. Bringing the Pixel 6 design language to the Pixel 6a. Bah, words are hard. What are our thoughts? The Pixel 6 launched at a ridiculously low price, and it completely jacked up Samsung's launch of the S21 FE. So now the S21 FE is likely going to come out in January, which, if the Pixel 6a is right around the corner, I think the pressure from that could also put a hurt on a Galaxy S21 FE. There's not a lot that you can cut out of an S21 to make it cheaper. I mean, you really have to gut the S21 experience and make it worser to come out with a cheap S21, a cheaper S21, where the Pixel 6 is already kind of the nice upper mid-ranger phone champ right now. Tensor is solid. The main camera sensor is a monster. Like, that is a phenomenal main camera sensor. The ultra-wide is okay. It's not bad. And it's already got a decently fast display. All the specs seem to line up right where that pricing should land. So if a Pixel 6a lands, and it's maybe even just $100 cheaper, that's yet another window of price competition that I don't know Samsung has a great solution for. I think it gets harder and harder for how Samsung has been already whittling back on features for the Galaxy S phones. They've been trying to encourage more enthusiasts to step up to the folding phones. Like, hey, if you're going to spend $1,000, maybe you want your phone to fold in half. I'm going to be curious. I still would prefer Google do away with the A series, but if the A series is going to keep the same SoC as the mainstream phone, then it's kind of like getting a Pixel 6 FE, right? The Pixel 6a just is going to be a gen back for camera tech, probably for display tech, but then otherwise is the same phone. That's kind of brutal competition, because Tensor is proving to be a pretty solid SoC, even if it's not the mostest fastest. So I don't know. What do we think? Let me get back into the comments here. I saw someone say yee. Okay, there we go. From Dave Burns, maybe a downclocked Tensor SoC. I would imagine there could be some kind of, especially because as these chips get binned, the better binned chips go into the more expensive Pixels. There's probably at least a trio of tiers. You know, bin 1 going into the Pixel 6 Pro, bin 2 going into the Pixel 6, and then everything that's left kind of reserved for Pixel 6As. I could totally vibe with something like that. Corcoran 3, a lot of people. I just wish these were a little bit smaller. I mean, even from the Pixel 5A, you know, this is not a small phone. Especially if you put a case on it. I don't have a case on my Pixel 5A. But it would be nice if we could get just something a little bit more reasonably condensed as one option. Dave Burns. Oh, but The Verge said that those cameras weren't even good enough to test. However, could they justify that device? That's funny. I've been shooting, for my reviews.org video that's coming out tomorrow, I shot a good chunk of that on the cameras on the Pixel 5a just to demonstrate what else I could do on a Pixel 6. They're great. Anyone who's complaining about like the Pixel era cameras doesn't understand photography. Like, especially with the Pixel mission being consumer point and shoot, accessible HDR processing, those things are still monster cameras. like they're still phenomenal cameras.
Oh, it's just not good enough as compared to a phone that costs twice as much. Who would ever buy a cheaper Pixel with great cameras? They need to be better cameras. It's like, oh, you sound so dumb if you say things like that. I'm sorry. Well, Kapokash, I mean, again, I feel it's manufacturing and binning and getting all these parts and pieces. Kapokash writes, why are they even making an S21 FE? The S20 FE was a good addition to light up the Galaxy S at the end of the year, and especially in light of how poorly the S20 was received. I feel Samsung was definitely looking at the end of the year, and everyone completely missed the boat on how Google was going to price the Pixel 6. Everybody. I mean, think of all of those tech reviewers that were putting out, like, on social media, like, I kind of don't even need to really use the phone. I can already kind of pre-write my review of the next Pixel, and it's going to be too expensive. You know, like, so many people already had designs on what they were going to do. And that's how toxic the tech reviewing community has become. And so when the price came out and it legitimately, like, rocked everybody, just how cheap the Pixel 6 was going to be, it put Samsung in a really tough position because S21 sales were even another additional step lower than S20 sales were. I keep bringing this up, but if the main argument you have is popularity, because a phone is popular, the company must be doing things right, then Samsung has been continuously getting things wrong. From the S10 to the S21, we've seen a 40% drop-off in Galaxy S sales. That is bad. And I really think Samsung was looking like, hey, we're going to start off with the S21. We're going to have our trio of devices. We're not going to do a Note. And so getting into the end of the year, we can light up just whatever remaining stock we have with an FE. And we, again, package it, put it all together, sell that phone, and it's going to do great. And then the Pixel 6 came in and just started slapping them around. And that, to me, is what's really exciting about healthy competition. Samsung can't get complacent as the default North American Android option if any other company can show we too can compete with some of these features and pricing. The FE looks like a garbage deal if they were only going to cut like $50 or $100 off an S21 MSRP.
Hey, podcast listeners. I work really hard to find mutually beneficial ways to support production on my various distribution platforms. Instead of just running ads on this podcast and hoping they don't annoy you, I want to find products or services that you really will get something out of and that can help fund my production. While I do talk about some of those items in ads throughout this podcast, I've never created one easy-to-view master list of my current partnerships until now. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. If you'd like to help contribute, support production of this podcast and my various videos and reviews, head on over to somegadgetguy.com. At the top, there's going to be a link for Support Some Gadget Guy, and you can see what my current partnerships are. At the time this podcast was recorded, in addition to my Patreon, we can hook you up with a $10 voucher for shopping a new OnePlus, save 20% on some One More headphones, sign you up for Google Fi service, Amazon affiliate links, Audible, or you can grab a Megapixel coffee mug of your very own. Savory, delicious Megapixels. Head on over to somegadgetguy.com, support banner on the top right-hand side of my website, and hopefully you find something cool, something you like, while also kicking me a little extra scratch.
McCorcoran, yeah, that's the good energy. I just bought a $200 Note 9 just for Dex. I don't have it on my desk. It's over there on the little table. But, you know, when my Samsung example phone is an S10e. It's the last phone that I really liked using, and it's awesome. It's such a little mighty mouse. It is a great phone. The LG G8 was a better phone. I'll say it. But the S10e was phenomenal. It's just funny. We kind of keep losing the thread and losing the plot. So Aditya writes, what price point they should consider. It was a highlighted comment that now I can't find in my main chat. Mm-hmm.
So, Aditya writes, what price tag would they consider? The Pixel 6 is already a lot of phone for the price. If Google sub 500, that will shake the market. Closest competition would then be Poco. Yeah. So I kind of feel like if you can keep the same ballpark, if you can launch a Pixel 6a in that $450 to $499 price window, I think you've got a great option for a lot of carriers here in North America. It looks cool. It looks fresh. It looks different. It might catch someone's eye as they're walking into a carrier store. Google is spending more on advertising and marketing, so there's a bit more mind share for this generation of Pixels. The A series has already found kind of a comfortable niche audience for people that have enjoyed the kind of Pixel. Again, none of my family have bought expensive Pixels. They're all on 4As. With my brother-in-law on a 3A. So that to me kind of like makes a lot of sense, especially if you can keep it in that same price window as a 4A 5G, then the 6A is going to end up being a monster, just an absolute monster, but even spending a little bit more, you know, kind of owing to the custom SoC, I still think it makes a strong argument for its existence. Oh, Barry Johnson, another shirt comment. One, how much do I need to invest? Let's get these made. I'm so bad at merch. I really need to kind of shake that kind of stuff up. So bad. Here, let me scroll back down through the rest of the chat here. And from 2Turbo, God, I hope another company can compete with Samsung when it comes to American consumers. iPhone versus Galaxy most of the time. And that's not competition when you only have two companies kind of racing to be the same. No one gets excited about that. So let me get into, we had one last kind of rumor or leak put out. I don't really like highlighting leaks and rumors. This is one that we keep dancing around. When is Google going to come out with their own smartwatch? When are we going to get a Pixel watch? Front Page Tech says they've got the scoop on it. I really hope this isn't the design. It's a circular smartwatch, but it's curved glass into the edges so that the glass is like almost bezel-less. And I just don't think that this is a great design for something that wears on your wrist and needs to be a bit more durable. So I hope if Google is working on a watch that it doesn't look exactly like this, but we'll have to see. This is just kind of like, again, it's in that nebulous zone of, I'm sure Google is playing with this kind of hardware. The Google hardware divisions are absolutely prototyping and benchmarking and experimenting with these different form factors and these different products. Like Pixel Fold, you know, will we get a folding Pixel at the end of the year or early next year? I'm sure they have demo and reference devices that they're working on right now. But this is what messes us up, is we start getting our expectations primed, then something changes or a manufacturing window shifts, or you have an off year like we had with the Pixel 5. Pixel 5 was still a great phone. So people wanted to compare it against other premium tier devices when it was a little bit more than half the price of a Galaxy S21 Ultra. So this to me is also that problem. The Fold was a rumor, was a launch rumor of a rumor. Then there's a rumor that the Fold is going to be discontinued. So it's a rumor of a discontinuation of a rumored rumor. And you're like, that's not fun. I want to talk about the things that are real and the things that are actually coming out and the things that make a difference in our tech landscape. Like, I want to talk about the stuff that you can buy now. And I'm so tired of our enthusiast commentary being lopsided to, before it's out, we've got the scoop. And when it's announced, we had early access. And again, I'm not impressed by someone whose only purpose in this conversation is to stand up in the middle of the lunchroom yelling first the loudest. Because you have no insight, you deliver no commentary, you provide no benefit to consumers. All you're doing is yelling first over here, pay attention to me. And that's lame. Because, like, think about all these crazy products that are out right now that we could be demonstrating real things, gaming, content creation, podcasting, document work, productivity, art and graphics and design, like all of these things your products could be doing right now. And instead, we've got a handful of producers that all they want to do is when the new product is announced, they get to kind of launch the embargo video saying, oh, but, you know, it's just not good enough. You know, I used it for like 2 hours on a Sunday. I even really put my SIM card in it, and it could be better. Like, shut up. I hate that so much. So anyway, that's kind of... I don't want to close it on too much of a downer. As we kind of wrap up this podcast, because I'm not going to go another half hour and my voice can't handle it, I want to highlight a Reddit thread. You know, I was talking earlier about being in an Apple thread and all these people just like savaging this iPhone fan for saying that the iPhone 13 should have a better telephoto camera. So we were just talking about messaging and someone asked a question about RCS and this kind of brought up a thought. So I just pulled it up now. It's an Apple thread talking about picture in picture. And I want to get your thoughts here in the live chat. And if you catch this in the audio or the replay, drop a comment, hit me up on Twitter. I'm really curious about how we feel about things like exclusives, right? You know, like if you're into PlayStation gaming, a part of that is probably because there are so many great exclusive games to the PlayStation platform. If you're into Nintendo gaming, Nintendo's character IP is exclusive to Nintendo hardware. We kind of have these ideas about how do we facilitate sales of hardware and how do we facilitate sales of software based on locking up, you know, or restricting the distribution of this kind of content. So we're going to wrap this. Yeah, Dave Burns is saying digress. But I want to hear from folks here in the chat. And I want to hear on this thought, on this topic. This is from R. Apple. Google put more effort into removing picture-in-picture from YouTube on Safari than actually implementing it. And it's an entire thread of Apple users who are frustrated with Google because Google wants picture-in-picture to be a part of their YouTube app as a YouTube Red perk. So if you want to have picture-in-picture on an iPhone, Google saying, we want the best version of our YouTube app to be a paid service, a subscription service. You don't get ads, and this enables better streaming and a picture-in-picture window. And they're trying to protect their version of YouTube. So if you go into Safari, now you have, there are all these other workarounds. It's not hard to get YouTube picture-in-picture streaming on an iPhone. But the most streamlined is they want you to use it in their app and you pay for that as a service. Same thing on Android. Like, it kills me because I just want audio-only streaming and that would actually be a benefit to Google, right? If Google data centers are sending me less information, that's less traffic they have to pay for, I should have audio streaming by default. So I can turn off my phone screen and just listen to a YouTube video. That pisses me off. Because they restrict that, that's one of the reasons I don't pay for YouTube Red. So I feel like that should be the most basic accessible version of YouTube, and it benefits Google. Why would you make me pay to improve your bandwidth costs, right? But here we're talking about Apple and how YouTube works on the iPhone. And we just got done highlighting a bunch of things like Apple's insane consumer lock-in, Apple's network and distribution of proprietary services, how Apple has actively harmed the messaging landscape with iMessage. And all of these things are always pointed to as benefits of the Apple ecosystem. So like, you know, well, if you need the best messaging, it's iMessage and FaceTime. And no one else is allowed to play with that. That is proprietary. That is locked up. No one else can crack into that. You have a different color text message so that everyone knows you're one of those filthy poor people with an Android phone. Everything Apple has done has been to make it an us versus them, locked in, locked up consumer marketplace. And as soon as another company tries to engage in a similar business practice with a marquee service like YouTube, it's this immediate gnashing of teeth that iPhone and Apple owners feel they are entitled the best version of every app or service. And it really kind of comes to a head. Like, I'm playing with a Surface Duo. You can make an argument for Apple, for Microsoft services in many ways actually working better on products like iPads. So why would I want to pick up a Surface Duo? You know, like if the most up-to-date, the most immediate improvements are all realized on Apple products first, maybe I should. Maybe I should switch teams and go and get an iPad and an iPhone. And this to me has always been the thing that has never made any sense. You know, if you've got one division at Microsoft making phones and hardware and another division at Microsoft making software, why isn't the hardware the best place to showcase that Microsoft software? And so Google's doing this here. They're trying to protect what they consider to be the value add of paying for YouTube Red. And I'm very curious, like, what are your thoughts on this? Because, you know, obviously the Apple community is very upset. How dare they try and restrain this feature on our iPhones? They should just give us this feature because we own iPhones. And so what do we think? What are some of your thoughts here? Let me kind of go back through some of these comments here. Digress. Dave Burns, oh yeah, why pay for a service you use constantly? So many people used Vanced anyway. I don't want to call attention to what I might be using on my phones to get audio only streaming. Shut up, Dave. From Aditya, isn't Picture in Picture already only paid, or does it mean they're not allowing premium users Picture in Picture on Safari, period? So on an iPhone, if you want Picture in Picture, that's a part of the paid service, but you used to be able to get Picture in Picture by going through the Safari browser. And so now Google is trying to break that so it doesn't really work on mobile Safari. So that's why they're upset, is because Google is putting more effort into restricting people from using Picture in Picture through a browser than really implementing new features on iPhones. But to me, that's kind of the same argument as Apple putting more effort into iMessage than allowing a more open communication standard, is the point I'm trying to make. Again, trying to draw parallels between these business practices. this is exactly what I'm talking about from TED Talks Tech. Juan, as a YouTube Premium subscriber, it is still difficult to get videos to play in Picture in Picture on my iPad. This is one of their complaints, is Google is working harder at breaking Picture in Picture for non-paying consumers than they are improving the service for paying consumers. So again, that's kind of highlighting, I think, one of the frustrations that they're talking about. But again, there's a part of this that's also like Apple has made multitasking so much more difficult. iPads are getting it right finally, but like there's no reason why an iPhone Pro Max shouldn't be able to split screen, right? You should be able to use two apps at the same time. This would be a non-issue. So I don't know. I genuinely don't know how Picture in Picture has been working on Android, because I don't use it. Yeah. Whenever I have a video playing on my phone screen and I want to do something else, I split screen so that I always have the top quarter of my screen docked to that video and then three quarters of my screen for whatever other app I want to use. I honestly don't know if Picture in Picture is still working on Android the same way, because I think Picture in Picture is kind of lame. Yeah, see, exactly, Dave Burns. I like being able to podcast my videos and listen to smart people talk to me. Same thing. There are so many great YouTube channels that I genuinely don't watch, but I listen to a lot. So that's, again, it's kind of the bummer to me that audio-only broadcast is a weird dividing line for paid and unpaid services. Dave, that's ugly. All right, 2 Turbo. I'm not a fan of exclusives. That's why I love Steam for making gaming not exclusive to Windows. I understand how Google advertises picture-in-picture as a YouTube premium feature to make the money, but when other apps can implement that functionality for free or offer background play because it's functionality already baked into Android, it's aggravating that it's paywalled only for YouTube. I completely agree. But again, I'm having difficulty kind of putting my words into good orders to convey my feelings on what it is. But I'm always kind of curious, not so much that it's a business practice that I disagree with, because it is. It's a business practice that I disagree with. I want audio-only streaming, and I don't think that should be a paid service when it's better for their side of the server side situation. But to me, it's the consistency of the approach of the criticism. We just take it for granted that Mario, Super Mario, is on Nintendo. Okay, we get that. We've acclimated to that business practice. We get it. Apple took so long to build any kind of two app at the same time multitasking capability that Google saw an opportunity to say, hey, as you're making this transition, this is a feature we think is a premium feature that we need to support on Apple software. So this is what we think it costs, and this is what we think people should pay. Again, it's kind of curious how the consistency of that criticism works in one direction, but often doesn't work in a different direction. Fat Produce, just Apple entitlement. But again, I mean, like, there's an expectation. Oh, if you're going to make an app, you've got to put it out the bestest first for iPhone. And I would like to see more companies push back against that. TED Talks Tech. The thing is, Google products have looked and performed better for years than the same products on Android. I think you mean on iOS. And that's fine. But why should we expect that to always be the case? I mean, that's the thing. Again, I mean, like, if you want to start making a play for why should I buy a Microsoft hardware product, you also need to understand the realities of all of the software distribution and services. And if I buy a Surface, I expect Microsoft services to work the best on that. And I think that's what's starting to shift, as these companies are now trying to kind of declaw some of their efforts in always making sure iPhones were the bestest supported. And that's, I think, part of the reason why we're seeing some of this ire in this one specific instance is, you know, the Apple solution isn't good. And Google is purposely trying to break some of the alternatives to it. And I don't think that's something iPhone customers are familiar with. You know, if you've been playing in the Android ecosystem since what, like, you know, the HTC Evo, you kind of know what it feels like to not be first in line for the bestest version or those updates. And that's, to me, why I feel like some of this backlash is so emotional, is they're not familiar with that feeling. Oh, yeah, Sveticus. And again, you know, I'm streaming this on Twitch. Twitch lets you turn the screen off but continue the audio. I wish YouTube had this too. There's no reason for them to not have that. Yeah, exactly. 2 Turbo, I'm not saying one is better. So pointing out that Apple does the same doesn't excuse Google, it's all bad. It's just pointing out the hypocrisy in the statements heard from Apple users online. That's exactly what I'm trying to point to, is a consistency of criticism. I feel it's fair to criticize Google, and I do, because I want features that I don't believe should be paid for features. What I'm curious about is why do criticisms flow in one direction but not in another? Some folks talking about jailbreaking. Some folks also talking about other apps you can install on Android. This will eventually be uploaded to YouTube, so I'm not going to say so much. Let me get this out of the way here. Well, no, I wasn't criticizing what you said, Ted. What I felt there was a word missing in your previous statement. He says, I said it right, Juan. For years, products like Google Search Maps looked better and performed better on iOS and Android. If you go back to your comment, you left out the word iPhone. That's what I was pointing out. So I'm agreeing with you. I feel like you need to just settle down there, buddy. I know you like your iPad, but no one was criticizing what you were saying. I was just pointing out that you had a comparative statement with only one product in the comparison. And I felt you should have added the word iPhone to that statement, which would be agreeing with your statement, is what I'm saying. But increasingly, that's going to change. And I don't think iPhone users are going to be prepared for a world where a lot of these services don't come to them bestest first. So yeah, I mean, it's great. They supported things like dark mode and theming first. I don't think that's going to be the case always moving forward. And I think YouTube is showing us a tip of the spear where iPhone users might need to take a backseat to getting better versions of this stuff out to Android users first. And as Google is in charge of their own products and services, I think that's the right way to do this. I think the right way to do this is to make other companies get in line for the best versions of Google services. Or just, you know, Ted, if you're upset about that, just buy a Pixel, right? Just always own a Chromebook and a Pixel and you'll be fine. Isn't that what we always say if, you know, you're talking about like Apple Music and things like that? Oh man, people talking about YouTube Music and Google Play Music and So I finally arrived at a music streaming service. So I was waiting to see if Spotify was going to change up their HD streaming policy. I'm on KoBuzz. I paid for a year of KoBuzz. I'm really digging KoBuzz. And I I'm going to kind of keep being just that you know, contrarian, you know, I'm wagging my fist in the back of the room. So why don't we go ahead and start closing this down? It kind of struck me as interesting. And this was such a heavy week for kind of Apple critical articles and headlines, investigations, and again, the company not living up to the standards that they set for themselves. And so I catch this thread after I've already seen a couple of other threads on subreddits where, man, if you don't toe the Apple line to its completion, like in every aspect, if you have anything critical to say about Apple, the response is becoming visceral on these communities, on these forums, on these postings. I'll just never forget someone loving their iPhone 13, participating on this subreddit, but just wishing the telephoto were a little bit better, which is totally fair. For an $1,100 phone, that's not even criticism. You know what I mean? Like, that's not even like, you know, critiquing the product. That's like basic pointing out like, hey, this is expensive. And I've seen examples of other phones that do this one feature better. I wish I had that here. And watching that reply just dogpile that person. Like, you start poking around, man, the messaging on this is just so lopsided. So I get to this one, and you know, like, there are so many examples of other things that we can point to where the reverse of this would never be questioned. Of course, iMessage needs to be the bestest for iPhone users and break messaging for everyone else. Of course, FaceTime kind of runs like garbage in a browser, but I mean, Apple went out of their way to let other people use FaceTime. If you want to use it the best, you should just buy an Apple product so that you can use FaceTime the best. Every single time or every single way that we would flip this, it's just taken as some kind of foregone conclusion. So then when a company steps out of line on that and restricts the quality of a service for iPhone users, man, the gnashing of teeth gets pretty intense. So again, as my podcast continues to descend into the toxic depths of media literacy, I just felt it was an interesting thing to bring up. It was just an odd Reddit thread to go to find yesterday and to kind of dig into. So, yeah, Roth, it's cutthroat out there. No joke. Two Turbo, I love Cobuzz, but my eclectic Dutch speed EDM is more available on Deezer. I'm not going to fault you there, man. You do you. That is a genre of music I feel woefully ill-equipped to comment on. If you need someone to pontificate on the virtues of second wave ska, I'm your dude. So why don't we go ahead and start wrapping this up, folks? Thank you so much for tuning in, for jumping in. I really appreciate all the support, all of the conversation, all this chat. And excuse me. And we do have some fun things coming up. We're going to be continuing the elimination challenge. So make sure you get your votes in for what alternative smartphone brands. Ultimately, keep it in mind who had the strongest year, because that's going to help you narrow down your vote for who increasingly had weaker years as we go down this ballot and as we go down this bracket. But I'm going to be really curious. I really feel like we're going to get to this enthusiast space and the race is going to be like Xiaomi sub-brands are going to be some of the top players and top options. There's enough love out there that maybe a Vivo can stick around. I don't know that one, even though OnePlus, the OnePlus 9 is the best phone OnePlus has ever made. It is a baller competitor. It's on for amazing sales right now. The software support has been pretty reasonable considering OnePlus's business strategy changes. I don't think OnePlus is going to eke out as long. Again, just talking the psychology of people voting on this stuff. But Vivo might stick around in there too. There's been a lot of good cheer for Vivo. So I want to see those votes, get those votes in there. A new bracket will be up tomorrow and every day after until we finally settle on a winner. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And then I've got some other videos and stuff coming out. I've got a reviews.org video coming out. I'm toying with trying to do a last minute Patreon community, either a movie watch along or a game, sort of a community gaming kind of thing. I kind of haven't nailed down exactly when I can do that, but keep your eyes peeled because a lot of that stuff is going to be coming soon too. And I've got a couple other videos just kind of closing out the year, talking about Pixel 6 camera, talking about Duo is productivity, and talking, I've got another one, on audio gear that's going to be coming out soon too. So thanks so much everybody for tuning in. I hope you all have an amazing week. So we're getting into the holidays. Look out for each other. Look out for your family members. Look out for your friends. It's this time of year that's all about connecting. And it's also the time of year that people, I think, feel the most vulnerable. And that's doubly true in our second year of global pandemic. So I know I'm preaching to the choir, but, you know, keep your chin up, stiff upper lip. But then also, just be the good neighbors that I know you can be. Because I think people really need it out there this year. I'm gonna be trying to look after one of my cousins living out here in Southern California, and bringing her some food and just kind of taking some time to catch up. Just we haven't been talking like we used to. So thanks so much. Be safe. Take care. Stay warm. Stay well fed. And I hope to catch everyone back here next week for another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SDGQA podcast channel. Be safe. Be well. Have an awesome week. I'll catch you back. I love y'all.
Recording voiceover, spoken word, is truly one of my favorite activities. My second favorite hobby is photography. Now, the smartphone might be making us deaf, but we can't deny the awesome power of the phone as a platform for photography and multimedia creation. If you've been looking to improve your mobile photog skills, if you want to produce more professional content, or you're just looking to take your family photos to the next level, I wrote a book to help you out with that. Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs is available on Amazon Kindle. Walking through the basic terminology of photography, covering the settings on your camera, discussing composition and inspiration, and I even include a long list of exercises and challenges to really hone your skills, all with some helpful example photos and diagrams. Search for Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs on Amazon, or use the quick link bit.ly/betterphotosbook to grab your copy today.